The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 1 a.m., July 4th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
We've come a distance. We've made some progress. But there are forces in America today that want to take us back. And we're not going back, we're going forward. We're going forward. So I've said many times to the young people back in Georgia and around America that when you see something that is not right, not fair, not just, you have to stand up, speak up, and get in trouble. Good trouble, necessary trouble.
Hi, welcome to K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. I'm hoping everyone is as well as can be. As we all tumble around in the orange tornado of injustice, chaos, and troll-driven, troll-led, and troll-dominated politics. And it is more than just politics, isn't it? I mean, it's like we can't just turn off the news and walk away from it anymore, can we? Not really. Because things are real enough now that the realities, effects, and side effects of the toxic explosion of what we once called Washington, D.C. continue to pile up on our own lives. And if the fallout from Washington hasn't touched you yet, it's only a matter of time. Okay, it's just some business. I know I said that I would have two podcasts last week, and I didn't. And it's not that the podcast is not a priority of mine. It is very much a priority of mine. But it has been all I can do just to stay afloat. Not simply time-wise, but emotionally these past 2 weeks. And while working on the show is a balm for tough times, the lack of sleep the show's produced is not. I've been very open on here about my clinical depression. And while I'm grateful for the medications that keep me engaged and alive in life, they are by no means a cure. Depression, or at least I should say my personal depression, takes day to day, hour to hour, and sometimes minute to minute management to prevent myself from relapse. And even with no extraneous forces dragging me down, and regardless of what kind of self-maintenance I'm doing, the depression can take over and win for a time. So, when the outside world bears down, this time in the form of politics, and I'm burning candles at both ends, and those candles are made of the very same politics that are boring holes in me, then I need to be extra careful. Self-care is paramount right now for all of us, because no one, not one of us, is allowed to drop out now. And I heard and read a lot of dropout kind of talk since last week, mainly when Supreme Court Justice Kennedy chose to retire, handing the Orange Destroyer the chance to set another Christian ideologue on the highest court in the land. Another extremist. A young, white, likely male, who will set progress back for a generation. I heard and read a lot of,
"It's over."
Well, that's the whole game.
Oh, well.
And while I don't usually cuss on this show, there were a lot of fuck it's.
Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Fuck it. So many good, smart progressives I know, out of fear and likely exhaustion, gave up. No. Nuh-uh. You can't throw in the towel now. We are at the beginning of a very long and very hard fight. And when all is said and done, do you want to say that when things got hard, you were one of the very first to drop out?
That's it. Day one.
No, they haven't. But they will if good people like you and me bow out at the time we're needed most. And I'm not naive about the odds. The odds are not in our favor when it comes to blocking this appointment. But we have to try. Patrick Henry said, quote, "If we wish to be free, if we mean to preserve inviolate those estimable privileges for which we have been so long contending, if we mean not basely to abandon the noble struggle in which we have been so long engaged, and which we have pledged ourselves never to abandon until the glorious object of our contest shall be obtained, we must fight," unquote. And look, I'm not trying to shame anyone who collapsed away from the fight, who announced to the right's glee on social media, "We're fucked,
fucked, fucked, fucked."
But we're not fucked. Our country is sick.
And a mess.
And the power centers are feeding it arsenic, but it's not dead yet. Russia wanted to sow division, collapse our institutions, and break our spirit. And if we let them, they will. But they haven't yet. They have to a degree, but not permanently. But I saw people in the streets across the country on Saturday. And it sure didn't look like a broken spirit to me. And so many, so many are waiting for Mueller to save the country. And while he might, that is simply not enough. I don't know who said it, but the power of the people is greater than the people in power. Step up. Don't back down. Lean in. Don't withdraw. Speak up and out and be heard. Now is the time to get loud. Be bold, be bigger, and we all need to be better. People are suffering. The earth is dying off. And if we do nothing, we are as guilty as those who are inflicting the hurt. How much of our lives have we spent turning a blind eye to the suffering around us? Trump has not even reached Obama's levels of deportations. And when Obama was doing it, I was at a bar or at a party or watching, I don't know, a Doctor Who. Oblivious. A Will Steinberg on Facebook pointed out that Nazi Germany went from the Third Reich, from government-sanctioned genocide, to a liberal democracy within a lifetime. And then there's Japan. Quote, "Stop pretending that the worst of what's happening now is what's going to always happen. This is what's happening right now. That's all you know. If you think that it's going to be this way forever, read a book." Countries slide into fascism for long periods. It happens. Countries also have short-term extremist right-wing governments. It happens in Europe all the time. They get voted out. The threat remains. The threat of fascism will remain in America in a way it never has before. It is a real movement, but we're not fucked. Not even close. We can get off the ropes in the midterms and knock them out in 2020, but only if we stop saying that we're fucked and start seeing this as a fight. I'm no Pollyanna. Things are so unutterably bad that I walk around in a constant state of nausea and horror. But you have to take the historical view. And you can't lie down and say we're doomed, or else they have beaten you. Unquote. I took a candidate seminar this past weekend, and Kevin DeLeon was there. He is a California state senator who's running against Dianne Feinstein for the U.S. Senate. While I have mixed feelings on that, he had some valuable insight, loosely. He made the point that our country is relatively young by world standards, and there are those who have dedicated their lives to dismantling all we have fought so hard for, who want to strip this country of the progress we have made. Women's rights, civil rights, LGBTQ rights, and all rights, save for the rights to own a gun, and, well, free speech.
Sometimes.
Only when that right serves them. And in fact, they have weaponized free speech. It can be seen in some of the devastating decisions that have come down from the Supreme Court recently. Same thing with freedom of religion. It too has become a weapon. Freedom of religion is little more than freedom to discriminate, and freedom to strip women and LGBTQ citizens of rights, and freedom to be a Christian and Christian only.
Praise Jesus!
Anyway, DeLeon's point was, if you don't get involved in politics, politics will get involved with you. Other countries are, and have been, far worse off than us right now. Hell, we have been far worse off than we are right now. The nation has never been so divided. Please. We had a civil war once. We had slavery. We killed Native Americans en masse. And look, all this is not to diminish the fact that things are bad. Things are bad. They're really bad. And if Donald gets another SCOTUS justice, then things will be bad for a generation. But we're not fucked. Not yet. We have hope. And we have tools at our disposal. And we have people smarter than us to look to. Or at least smarter than me. But people to look to for hope. House member Mark Takano was telling us at the seminar how he got in the elevator the day the Muslim ban decisions came down. And he was bummed out. And he must have looked it when Representative John Lewis got in the elevator and said, "Why are you so down, brother?" Takano mentioned something about the rulings and he told Mark Takano not to be. John Lewis nearly died fighting for civil rights in 1965 after a state trooper cracked his skull open. Lewis has earned the right to be positive in the face of dark times. On Wednesday the 27th, the day we found out that Kennedy was abandoning the country, John Lewis tweeted, quote, "Do not get lost in a sea of despair. Be hopeful. Be optimistic. Our struggle is not a struggle of the day, a week, a month, or a year. It is the struggle of a lifetime. Never be afraid to make some noise and get in good trouble. Necessary trouble. Hashtag good trouble." Unquote.
Good trouble. Necessary trouble.
Now, I'm the first to fall into hopeless negativity and to curse our country, to curse in general. And I understand that reaction profoundly. And I had to fight my own way out of that hole on Wednesday. I get it. I'm still fighting it. I'm fighting despair by fighting for this country because I have no other country. I have no plan B, and so many people don't. If all the good people are just going to give up, then there really is no hope. Children in cages, women going to prison for having miscarriages, the press shut down, who knows what else. That is our future if our side doesn't realize that we have power. Again, the power of the people is greater than the people in power. All it takes is 3%, maybe 3.5% of the people in a nonviolent revolution to overturn a government. And we may not be there yet, but we are on our way. And here's the thing. Nihilism, cynicism, these things are contagious and can become cool trends.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to give up, to not try, to not vote, sinful sins, keep it to yourself. Do not proselytize your abdication of civic responsibility. Do not poo-poo other people's efforts. Do not sit on your defeatist high horse, looking down at those struggling to make this world a better place. If you and all the other smart people who care proselytize about there being no hope, about it all being over, then I'll lose hope too, and many more like me, and they'll win.
White nations!
White nations!
Close borders!
Close borders!
Now we start the deportation!
Now we start the deportation!
And you'll be right. But that's all you'll have. You and all the rest. And you can go to bed knowing that you were right, and there was no hope, and that there was no chance, and that there was nothing you could do. Like a virus, everybody will pull each other down. Be an ally. Apathy is complicity, and there is no other way to swing it. The Holocaust Museum writes about how in the field of Holocaust studies, scholars have traditionally divided populations into three categories: perpetrators, victims, and everyone else, the bystanders. But because the term bystander usually connotes silence and passivity rather than involvement, some scholars have advocated not using the misleading term. Instead, they split bystanders into two black and white categories: the majority of indifferent or apathetic persons, and then there's a small minority, altruistic and rescuers. Be a rescuer. Be altruistic. It's what John Lewis said. Quote, "A struggle is not a struggle of a day, a week, a month, or a year. It is a struggle of a lifetime." Unquote. So, what do we expect now? Once Cheddar Boy has nominated someone to fill the Kennedy vacancy, the nominee has to have a hearing and a confirmation vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Then another confirmation vote in the full Senate, which now requires a simple majority of senators to vote yes to confirm. As the good folks at Indivisible point out, the hard truth is there is no procedural tool to stop this. Probably. All they need is a simple majority. As there are currently 51 Republican senators, that means they have all the votes to confirm Donnie's nominee. That is, unless we stop them. To begin with, we need 49 no votes. That is from every single Senate Democrat. If you remember, turncoat Senators Manchin, Heitkamp, and Donnelly betrayed women, people of color, and the LGBTQ community, voting for Neil Stolenseit Gorsuch, despite the fact that seat should have been Merrick Garland's, despite his stance on Roe v. Wade, despite. So, once we get them, that gets us to 49. To get to 51, we need a couple Republican senators.
Oh no.
The two most logical targets are Senators Collins and Murkowski. And they're giving us their normal song and dance about, well, if the nominee demonstrates hostility towards Roe, then I won't vote for him. The nominee is not going to announce in hearings that he, maybe she, is going to screw over women. Donnie, the boiled ham in a wig, will choose a nominee next week, probably. So there is no waiting. First and foremost, call your senators, and then call again. I don't care if they are Republicans or Democrats. You tell them that they are to fight this nomination with everything they've got. Don't call once, call them every day. Flood their phone lines so they cannot ignore you.
Ring, ring, hello?
Call only the senators who represent you. Tell them you're a constituent and ask them to publicly comment on opposing an extreme Trump nominee. Next, sign up right now to help Democrats take back the Senate. No matter what, we have to do everything we can to take back the Senate because Supreme Court nominees must be confirmed by the Senate. Winning has implications for the fight before us and the ones to come. Republicans are hoping to wrap up the Kennedy replacement by the end of summer, but if we mobilize enough opposition, there may be a chance this process takes longer. Donnie may even have to withdraw a nominee and begin the process all over again. Either way, this may not be the last Supreme Court fight under Donald. In order to actually win this fight, we have to retake the Senate. Otherwise, Donald will just make an appointment after the election. Democrats need to hold on to all of their seats and pick up two more seats. So here are our five pickup opportunities this year. So there's Ted Lee Cruz.
The charmer.
The Republican from Texas.
He's so dreamy.
There's Dean Heller of Nevada. Cindy Hyde-Smith of Mississippi. And we need to replace retiring Republican Bob Corker of Tennessee and replace retiring Republican Jeff Flake of Arizona. Are these tough? Totally. Are they impossible? Nope. Not at all. We've got a chance. And we just need two of them. But we have to do the work now. We need to phone bank, knock on doors, and send texts to voters. We can retake the Senate and stop confirmations of bad judges for the rest of the dehydrated Orange Peel's term. So first up, call your senators. Even if they're on record for wanting to stop this nomination, you let them know that they have your support and that they need to stick to their guns, hell or high water. None of this civility, Democrats. You can call the switchboard at 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. Do it now.
Ring, ring, hello.
And then we're all going to volunteer and we're going to get Democrats elected and we're going to not just take the House, we're going to take the Senate. Because we have to stop this remaking of the judiciary. We have got to stop it. Okay? All right? All right. This week is the nation's 242nd birthday, and while many in our nation are feeling more patriotic than ever, if that's possible...
Make America great again! Woo! Yeah, baby!
Many are losing their love of country, as a broken political system, at-risk judicial system, and warring factions in society wear us down.
His religion is hating America.
Patriotism is not about hoisting a flag or saying the Pledge of Allegiance or standing for the national anthem.
We proudly stand for the national anthem.
Saying a pledge or donning an obnoxious hat. Patriotism is fighting for not just the values and ideals this country was founded on, but fighting for better than that. Fighting so that every man, woman, and child may have the same opportunities to fully embrace all America has to offer. By lifting up the individual, we lift up the country as a whole. Thomas Jefferson said of Independence Day in the passage of the Declaration of Independence, quote, "Let the annual return of this day forever refresh our recollections of these rights and undiminished devotion to them," unquote. So, I went back to the Declaration of Independence just to read it again and see what was up. And this is chilling. The Declaration of Independence is largely a list of grievances, outlining the King of Britain's history of, quote, repeated injuries and usurpations, unquote, that the founders called tyranny. So here's the thing. Our current president has done, tried to do, or openly mused about doing just about all of them. Here's some highlights. Quote, "He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them." Unquote. Sanctuary cities. Well, Donnie has been unable to stop the passage of laws by governors and cities. He has been musing over doing so, and even been punishing states who do so. And he's doing the same thing with California and setting emission standards. Quote, "He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands." Unquote. Immigration? Quote, "He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount of payment of their salaries." Unquote.
Loyal. We could use some more loyalty, I will tell you that.
Not only did he push Kennedy to retire early so that he could install his own judge, he has provided loyalty tests to judges. Quote, "For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world." Unquote. "America first, baby." Quote, "For imposing taxes on us without our consent." Unquote. Hello, unpopular GOP tax cut, which raised taxes on the middle class and the majority were against. Quote, These united colonies are, and the right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, unquote. This echoes the tension with European leaders over the G7 summit, trade, and funding NATO. Quote, taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, unquote. Not simply did he roll back the Paris Climate Accord and the Iran deal, which a majority supported. He is working to completely abolish entire agencies within the government. Quote, he has plundered our seas, ravaged our coast, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. Unquote. Like, if you count the climate change he is ramping up, he is burning our towns, ravaging our coast, and opening up drilling in our seas and our lands, and destroying lives of our people. Yup. Quote, he is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of desolation and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy of the head of a civilized nation. Unquote. Similar to, though not quite as extreme and not foreign armies, but similar to ICE. Quote, he has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, unquote. Yes. It finally says, quote, in every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for readiness in the most humble term. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be ruler of the free people. I repeat, a prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be ruler of a free people. Happy 4th of July, everyone.
Representative Tom Brinkman is from right here in Mount Lookout. He proposed this bill that says that teachers, counselors, and hospital employees would be required to out a kid to their parents if they suspect they're questioning their gender identity.
Have you seen the pictures of these so-called detention camps?
Yes, have you heard the tape? It's weird. I think they need to improve their scripts. They're saying mommy and daddy. Nope, you want to put it in Spanish next time.
People are saying that because, the biggest thing is these kids are being separated from their parents.
They're being separated from coyotes and drug mules. I mean, that has already been proven.
And their parents. They're in there by themselves.
You know what? The parents could stay in Mexico.
Like it or not, these aren't our kids. Show them compassion. But it's not like he's doing this to the people of Idaho or Texas. These are people from another country.
It is an absolute war zone on the border. We are getting gamed at every turn. And if it were happening in any other country, there would literally be tanks on the border and the invasion would be stopped.
We keep marrying other species and other ethnics. The Swedes have pure genes because okay. They marry other Swedes because that's the role.
That was the melodious tones of the right-wing media propaganda machine that has been making our country sick for the last, I don't know, ever. So I saw a HuffPost piece. I posted it on my K-Voice page last week if you want to check it out. It's called, quote, I don't know how to explain to you that you should care about other people. Our disagreement is not merely political, but it is a fundamental divide in what it means to live in a society, unquote. If you have ever had the displeasure of throwing down online or in person with a MAGA-capped individual, you'll have likely ran into an impasse that I and this author, Kayla Chadwick, run into just about every time. All the emotional appeals, logical analysis, salient points, reason, facts, evidence in the world can never get past the divide that comes from the fact that our side of the aisle tends to care about people while the other doesn't. Or they do, but they just care about their own people. Progressives, liberals, tend to be more about the greater good. Trying to convince someone that they should care about people is like trying to get my mom's fat dog to go for a walk. She just lays down and stares at me blankly like I'm an idiot. The concept is so far beyond her. And it's not that she is incapable of walking. She just thinks it's a stupid idea. Chadwick points out that she is willing to pay an extra 17 cents for a fast food burger so that the employee behind the counter can make a living wage. She is willing to pay higher taxes so that kids can go to decent schools, regardless of the fact that she does not, nor do I, have or plan on having kids. Now, I personally have never, luckily, needed government assistance for food, but I am more than happy to pay the taxes that mean that people in need can eat. I am more than happy to pay taxes that mean that disadvantaged kids can have a free lunch. And those who are not willing to are so far beyond me as to be a different species. And I'm not asking for a pat on the back because I care about others. I don't because it's less of a choice than a reflex. Chadwick writes, quote, "If you are okay with thousands of people dying of treatable diseases just so the wealthiest among us can hoard still more wealth, there is a divide in our worldviews that can never be bridged. I don't know how to convince someone how to experience the basic emotion of empathy. I cannot have one more conversation with someone who is content to see millions of people suffer needlessly in exchange for a tax cut that statistically they'll never see. Do you make anywhere close to the median American salary? Less? Congrats! This tax break is not for you. I cannot have political debates with these people. Our disagreement is not merely political, but a fundamental divide on what it means to live in a society, how to be a good person, and why any of that matters." Unquote. In the end, Chadwick throws in the towel. There is no point in futility, no reason to try to get others to care. Some divides just cannot be bridged. So, how do we get someone to care about others? We don't. We fix the world despite them, not with them. Save our breath. 93 million people chose not to vote in 2016. And look at the suffering it has wrought. Those are the ones we need to win over. 93 million people. Okay, before I go, we have a call to action. Besides the hugest call to action, which is calling about the Supreme Court justice, and getting out there to pound the pavement for 2018. Keep work requirements for SNAP out of the farm bill. It's headed to the conference committee. The House and the Senate have both passed their own versions of the farm bill, and the Senate version does not include work requirements to receive SNAP benefits, nor does it get conversion programs like the House bill does. The legislation now heads to conference committee, where a bill fight is expected. Current funding expires September 30th. Therefore, a compromise must be completed soon. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, a SNAP, helps over 40 million low-income Americans purchase food. Over 60% of SNAP recipients are children, adults over 65 or adults with disabilities. Research has shown that access to SNAP reduces poverty and food insecurity, leading to lasting improvements in recipients' health and economic stability. SNAP access also helps non-disabled recipients' health and economic stability. SNAP access also helps non-disabled working-age adults re-enter the workforce by providing crucial financial support while they are in between jobs. Local economies benefit from SNAP as well. A 2010 U.S. Department of Agriculture analysis estimated that for every dollar spent on SNAP benefits, $1.79 was reinvested into the economy. Every 5 years, Congress sets to the task of reauthorizing the Farm Bill, with SNAP representing approximately 80% of the total budget of the bill. For the first time, House Republicans have added new strict work requirements to that legislation, requiring millions of people to get food through SNAP to either have a job or attend job training classes for 20 hours a week. Those who violate the work requirements would become ineligible for SNAP benefits for a year, with subsequent violations resulting in a three-year loss of benefits. Colin Peterson, Democrat of Minnesota, a senior member of the House Agriculture Committee, said the SNAP changes would increase food insecurity and hardship. Call your House representative now, 202-224-3121. Okay, guys. Thank you for sticking with me and this episode of K, Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show on crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice and on Facebook, where you will find all the stories I've discussed on this show and more at K, Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with hosts Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer, 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right. Take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Resist!